Once again, I wanted to thank the mothers. I'm amazed and inspired by the mothers. Thank you for your commitment, your dedication, your service. Please, please, please know, moms, that you are loved, valued, and appreciated. And we pray that you would understand that yours is indeed a high and holy calling, a special ministry. And I just pray that God would pour out His Spirit upon you. Life can be the pits sometimes, you know. Mothers would probably agree with that, wouldn't they? Life can be the pits sometimes. How many of you have been in a pit before? Yeah? Just about everybody. How many are in a pit right now? Be courageous to say, you know, I'm kind of in a pit. Yeah? Some of you are in a pit right now. I think it was last Sabbath or before, Caden was in the back. My grandson Caden was in the back. Church was over and he was flipping around. I'm not sure what he was doing. Dancing around. He slammed into the wall and then fell on his back and he was holding his arm like this, kind of rolling around. I said, "Why are you okay? Did you hurt yourself?" He said, "Yeah, I hit my armpit on the wall." So I had to do a little, it's a teaching moment, and explained some anatomy to him. I don't know if Kurt or Kaylee are to blame for that, but he was a little confused. But life can be the pits. It can be an armpit, even. We've been looking at this man, Joseph. We just started, actually, last week, and we looked at Genesis 37, verses 1 through 11. I invite you to go back there with me. Let's real quickly review Genesis 37, verses 1 through 11. I want to read verses 3 through 4. You'll remember the coat and the dreams, and we'll just recall that and give the story today some context. This is Genesis 37, verse 3. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a tunic, a coat of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him." Verse 5, "Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he said to them, 'Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf.' And his brother said to him, 'Shall indeed you reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?' So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words." And then Joseph had an epiphany. "I know, I'll tell him the other dream. This will help." Verse 9, "Then he dreamed still another dream and told his brothers and said, 'Look, I've dreamed another dream. And this time, the sun, the moon, the 11 stars all bowed down to me.' So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, 'What is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come bow down to you, to the earth before you?' And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in his mind." So there you have it. We have this multicolored coat-wearing favorite son of the father. And knowing or unknowingly, he was stirring the bitter ashes of hatred and jealousy and envy in the hearts of his brothers. And they hated the fact that the father blatantly and continually showed favoritism towards Joseph. And they hated that obnoxious, one-of-a-kind, look how special I am jacket that Joseph paraded around in, right? And they especially hated those dreams. Those prideful, patronizing, arrogant dreams, at least in their minds. So Genesis chapter 7, verse 12. Let's pick up the story there. It says, "Then his brothers went to feed his father's flock in Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, 'Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.' So he said to him," Joseph said, "'Here I am.' Then he said to him, 'Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flock and bring word back to me.' So he sent him out into the valley of Hebron and he went to Shechem." Now Shechem is roughly about 50 miles, and this is a really simplistic, not too terribly accurate map, but it gives you a rough idea. So Hebron, he's going to travel up to Shechem, 50 miles, 3-4 days journey maybe. And we'll get to Dothan, but that's another, you know, maybe 15 miles. So his father sending him out to Shechem, and Shechem should ring a bell, right, in the previous story, because it was the king of Shechem's son, right, that raped Dinah, Israel, or Jacob's daughter, and then some of the sons decided, hey, let's go take revenge, and just wiped out all the men in the city, plundered the city, took all their stuff. And so I can see why maybe Israel's a little, I wonder how the guys are doing up at Shechem. Joseph, maybe you should go check on the guys. Check on your brothers. So he's sending him up there. I love the way that Joseph responds. Here I am. Here I am. Those are words of a faithful and diligent servant, are they not? This is the seventh time those words are used in Genesis. It'd be interesting. Go back, look them up in your concordance, go back and see when and where they were used. Look at verse 15. So he's on his way, right, to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? You know, hey, what are you doing here, guy? What's going on? Verse 16, so Joseph said, I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks. And the man said, well, they've departed from here. And I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now, I think there's some interesting things about this. First, who is this guy? Who is this guy that just happened to be there? Was he an angel? Was he just a guy at a well? We don't know, but I wonder, you know, God's behind all this, orchestrating and moving things around. I can't help but think that God placed this guy here or used him some way to let Joseph know to go north another 15 miles. So Joseph went after his brothers. Now think for a minute. You've traveled 50 plus miles, major journey, 3 or 4 days. Your father said, go check on the guys up at Shechem. You get there. They're not there. You don't know if they're... This guy says they went north, but you don't know that for sure. You've fulfilled your obligation, haven't you, to your dad? You could go back home, it seems to me, real easily and say, Dad, went to Shechem. Guys weren't there. Some guy said they may have went north, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know, really. Would have been easy to turn around and go back, wouldn't it? But not Joseph. Because, remember, here I am. He was faithful and diligent. He wasn't going to give up. He was going to fulfill the best ability to his father's request. Well, I got to thinking, aren't we sometimes not quite like Joseph in that we go part way? Here's if the father reveals his will, the father gives us a calling, do this, here's my principle, this is how to live, or some specific thing he's calling you to do. And we kind of go partway, halfway, or we do it in a twisted way that we want to do it in, and then we feel like, well, I did what the Father asked. What did you? Did you do what the Father asked? Some of us just, we go to Shechem, and we kind of give up and say, well, that's good enough. Close enough. Close enough is good for what? Horseshoes and hand grenades, they say, right? But with the Father's will, it's not good enough. We should have a heart like Joseph, that as he wanted to please his father, we should want to please our father. Whatever he asks, I'm not just going to go to Shechem. I'm going to go all the way. I'm going to fulfill this as best as I can. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give up. So I'm challenging you, challenging me, to don't give up. Don't give up in Shechem. Don't give up in Dothan. Don't give up in the pit. Don't give up in the prison. Don't even give up if you end up in a palace. Don't give up on the Father's will. And you fill in the blank, because we're all tempted to give up at Shechem. And you could be giving up on a relationship, a friendship, You could be giving up on a job. You could be giving up on a marriage. You could be giving up on a lot of different things. Tempted to give up just to stop at Shechem or some part of God's will, His truth. And say, well, it's close enough. I went to Shechem. Yeah, but that wasn't what the Father asked. Well, kind of it was. Yeah, but not really. The Father's will was really, the heart of it was to find His brothers and see if they're okay. What's the Father's will for you? Don't give up at Shechem. So verse 18, it says, now when they saw Him afar off, even before they came near them, His brothers, they conspired against Him to kill Him. They saw Him afar off. How do you think they saw Him? What? How could they see Him? Ta-da! Coat of many colors, right? No doubt saw this guy coming. So they begin to talk about themselves. Hey, there he is, strutting his stuff. Let's kill him. Today's a good day to kill our brother Joseph. Verse 19, then they said to one another, look, this dreamer's coming. Here he comes. Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will come of his dreams, right? How are your dreams working out for you now, Joseph? In the bottom of a pit, left for dead. Hatred, envy, jealousy, bitterness, unforgiveness, murderous contempt. It's incredible, isn't it? What his brothers were ready to do. They were going to murder him. It's just mind-boggling, isn't it? Although we commit murderous acts against one another, don't we? What we say, how we treat people sometimes. You remember the story, the beginning of the book. This is Genesis 4:4. Abel brought the firstborn of his flock and from their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that what? Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. Sin's desire is for you, but it is God's will that you would rule over it, that you would be empowered by His Spirit, that you would be obedient to His Word, that the indwelling Christ would cause you to be a man or a woman that wants to do the fullness of the Father's will. But here these brothers were, these 10 older brothers, ready to take out, to murder their younger brother, Joseph. It's an amazing thing. Look at verse 21. But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. Now Reuben, he's got issues. He's not a saint, if you will. But he's standing up, it seems, for his brother Joseph. Reuben says, let's not kill him. Verse 22, and Reuben said to him, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. So Reuben had a plan. He says, don't kill him, put him in this pit. And then Reuben's plan was he's going to kind of sneak back, get him out of the pit, take him back to his father. Seems like he was trying to do a good thing. It really does, doesn't it? A couple things to look at in this passage. One is when Reuben heard it, he heard what was going on. But in a sense, it was a little, it was too little too late is what it was. Now this hatred had been brewing, this bitterness, this rage, this envy, this jealousy had been brewing for a long time. And maybe Reuben was confronting it, I don't know. And I appreciate Reuben taking his stand, but in the end, it was too little too late. It was still, in a sense, compromise. And in some ways, I think maybe he was justifying himself. He did say, let us not kill him. And we say all kinds of things that maybe would follow that line. I didn't mean for this to happen. It was an accident. Here's the thing. Why didn't Reuben just say, this is wrong? You're talking about murdering your brother. This is wrong. Don't throw him in a pit. Don't murder him. Let's sit down and let's work through this. This is wrong. That's what Reuben should have said. That's what you and I should say. This is wrong. We need to work through this. But sometimes we'll justify ourselves, and again, it's the Shechem thing in a sense, by going part way or doing something. Something's better than nothing. Well, maybe, maybe not. I go to church, but I live like a pagan. Well, is it good that you go to church? I guess. Maybe, maybe not. You know what I mean? We justify ourselves sometimes by some of the things we do that are good, but we ignore a lot of other things that are going on in our heart and our minds and around us. And we only go halfway. Maybe it's to make ourselves feel good. Maybe it's to try and help. I don't know. Every situation is different. I don't know Reuben's heart. I don't know your heart. I struggle to know my own heart. But I wonder. Years later, in Genesis 42, listen to this. This is 42, verse 21. Then they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against that boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. Remorse and guilt are terrible taskmasters, and they drive us into the ground, trap us in a pit. Someone said forgiveness is not passivity. We talked about Jacob or Israel's passivity with his kids. It seemed to be an inherited thing almost. Forgiveness is not passivity. Forgiveness is power. Forgiveness is power. Power in your life, power in another's life, power in community, power in the church. Forgiveness. And they would learn this lesson, but much, much later down the road, wouldn't they? We tend to justify. We can't justify. We've got to get off this path of compromise. We've got to stand tall and be courageous. We've got to stand up and even go a little bit further than Reuben did that day and say, stop this. This is not right. This is not of God. This is not Spirit-led. This is not of the Word. This is not what God would have us do. We have to be that kind of men and that kind of women. And like we talked about in our adult class upstairs today, we do it with humility and we do it with grace and compassion. But we must do it. Genesis 37, verse 23. So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. When they took him, then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal, and they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, myrrh, and they were on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal the blood? I've got an idea. Verse 27, come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh. That's compassionate. Yeah, right. And his brothers, listen, yeah, boy, Judah, I think you might have something here. That's an idea. Verse 28, then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up, lifted him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And then it says they took Joseph to Egypt. Stripped him. What was the first thing they did? They stripped that coat off of him, didn't they? The hatred, the envy, the jealousy. Come, let us sell him. Let not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother. He's our own flesh. Let's not kill him. Let's sell him into slavery. That would be much more godly, wouldn't it? And his brothers listen. They're listening to this idea, right? That makes sense. Who are you listening to at school, at work, at college, in community? Are you listening to people of compromise? Are you listening to people that are led of the culture and the world? Or are you listening to people that are led of the Spirit, that live by the Word, and that have the indwelling Christ within them? Who are you listening to? And they took Joseph to Egypt. What would it be like... to be in that pit? Have you thought about what was going through Joseph's mind at this point? What was he thinking about? Shouldn't have wore that coat today. Shouldn't have shared about those dreams, maybe. This is not going to end well. And I don't know what kind of a pit it was. Exactly what it looked like. But pits generally are never real good, are they? But pits are common terrain for believers. They are. David knew what it was like to be in a horrible pit. Yeah? Jeremiah sank in the mire in the depths of a pit of a dungeon, right? Daniel was cast down into the den to a pit of lions, in a sense. By design, pits are low and lonely places, right? But in addition to that, by design, they're actually, or at least they can be, learning places. They are for, or they can be for, our advancement, our growth, our transformation. And they may feel like life is ended, and they may feel like a shallow grave, and this is it, and everything is over. But really, they are a place, if we allow it, that God can do an incredible work in our minds and our hearts and take us to a place that we fulfill God-sized dreams and callings like we never could have without having been placed in that pit. So what are we supposed to learn while we're in the pit? Because I want to learn it because I don't like pits, right? I don't want to go back. Let me learn this lesson well. Here's some lessons to learn, some pit principles, if you will. When you're in the pit, to know this, that your Father still loves you. Your Father still loves you. Pits are a breeding ground for disbelief, for doubt. Does God love me? How could He allow this to happen? Should I give up? We have all kinds of doubts and things that are going through our minds. But I'm telling you, don't doubt the love of God when you're in the pit. Principle number two. You know what? Not everyone appreciates your dreams. You may as well learn that now. Your ideas, your visions, your perspective, not everybody's on board, right? And though God may have placed some huge, holy, heavenly, incredible calling and dream in your heart, it doesn't mean that others won't misunderstand it and that they won't judge you and they won't be against you. But you still hold tight to that dream. If it's from God, you hold tight to it. And the thing that we might recognize is that the ones closest to you may be the very ones that reject you and come against your dream, this vision that God has given you. Number three, God's plan takes time. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depending on how you look at it, God's plan takes time. This time of God has a way of purifying us, doesn't it? The fire, the dross gets it out of the sin, the pride out of our lives. And for the next 20 years, God was, from this moment of getting thrown in the pit, God was doing a work in the heart and mind of this man named Joseph. He would experience disappointment, accusation, betrayal, imprisonment. But what seemed like a nightmare that never was going to end was actually the unfolding of a dream of God's will in his life. God was in control, right? But God's sovereignty, God's plan doesn't always quite correspond with our schedule, does it? So when you're in the pit, don't think that somehow you're out of alignment with God's plan. You might be just in perfect alignment with his plan. Pit principle number four. Your setback is maybe God's setup. This pit stop may be his way of orchestrating everything and doing this work. And you need to realize that it may be something that God is setting up. And when you look at men and women in the Bible, when you look at Christ, you'll see that there was groaning before glory. There was a descending before an ascension. Men and women that were used greatly oftentimes went through great persecution, went down deeply into a horrible pit, but God raised them up. And sometimes it took a long, long time, but it was all part of God's plan. So maybe God is just setting you up for his glory. Number five, last one. Pits serve as a great opportunity to trust God, right? Who is more capable at seeing the big picture? You in a pit or God? God. Yeah. Who knows how to order your life better? You or God? God. Yeah. Who knows all the surrounding details? You or God? God, right? God knows better every single time. God knows better. And so it's a challenge to trust him while we're in the pit. Eventually, Joseph is lifted out of the pit, but it's a lot of years. And eventually, the dream is fulfilled. And eventually, God saves the land of Egypt through all of this. Eventually, God saves the people of Israel through this. Eventually, God restores Joseph's relationships with his family, his brothers. Eventually, but it started in a pit. Let's wrap this up. Genesis 37:29. Then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit, and he tore his clothes. Reuben had, for whatever reason, he went to check on the flock. We don't know, but he's gone when some of this happened. He returns. Joseph's gone, verse 30, and he returned to his brothers and said, "The lad is no more, and I, where shall I go?" So they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it unto their father and said, "We found this. Do you know whether this is your son's coat or not?" That's kind of hilarious, isn't it? This brightly one-of-a-kind, multicolored, could this be your son's jacket? And Israel recognized, the father recognized and said, "Yeah, it's Joseph's, it's my son's. A wild beast has devoured him. Without a doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces." We reap what we sow, don't we? In one way or another, eventually, we reap what we sow. Galatians 6:7 says, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, he will reap. Whatever he sows in the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit of the Spirit reap everlasting life. Israel, Jacob, have sown some things that are coming back, and he's reaping some of this. Look at verse 34. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth,
on his waist and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and his daughters arose and tried to give him comfort. But he refused to be comforted and said, "For I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and the captain of the guard. And the brothers are seeing the grief-stricken, tear-eyed father. And they know the truth. And they're pretending and they're lying and they're hypocrites and they've done a horrible thing. But God's using it, isn't he? God's using all of it. Joseph's story illustrates how even when God turns a man or a woman's life upside down, when he reverses it all, and it's all seemingly upside down, that he can orchestrate still. He can work it out for your good still. And so as this chapter ends, there's a great suspense. You know, will God deliver Joseph? What's going to happen in Egypt? And a lot of us, we know the story. You know, will restoration happen between his brothers? How's this all going to end? So it's a cliffhanger at the end of Genesis 37. And that's the way our lives are a lot, right? It's a cliffhanger. We're in the pit or things happen and we don't know. How's this all going to work out? What's going to happen? But we've got to trust in God. We've got to have faith in him. Trust no matter what. If you know someone who's struggling and they're in a pit, here's what I would suggest. Some just basic things that you can do to help them. Because there are a lot of people in a lot of pits. Life's full of them. Be an example of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's your love, your grace, your goodness, Spirit working through you. Your example can have an incredible, incredible impact on this person. But you've got to come alongside them, right? You got to be their friend. It doesn't happen over Facebook real well or over the phone. You got to get with this person to be a good example. You need to be in prayer for them. You need to encourage them. You need to be persistently leading them to Christ as they're grappling and struggling with this pit that they're in. You need to be able to provide good, godly, biblical counseling and provide them with the truth of the Word. And you can only do that if you know the truth of the Word, right? And finally, you need to help them to cry out, to confess, and to consent. To cry out to God in their pit, in their agony, in the darkness. To cry out to Him. And then to confess maybe some of the things that they have done that have contributed to their being in this pit. And then finally, you need to help them to consent, to surrender, to consent to God's working in their life, to consent to surrender to the sovereignty of God. Psalm 40 verse 1 says, "I waited." And that word waited is there's a connotation of expectation and anticipation. "I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined to me, and He heard my cry. He brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and He set my feet upon a rock, and He established my steps, and He has put a new song in my mouth. So praise be to our God. Many will see it and will fear and will trust in the Lord." Are you in a pit? You know someone that's in a pit? Cry out, confess, consent. As our worship team comes, I want you to think about Joseph's response. What was he going through? What was he thinking? What were his struggles? What have your struggles been in the past? How have you faced them and worked through them? Those, you know, your friends, your family that have been in pits and have just really struggled down, mired down in it, how can you come alongside them? How can you counsel them? How can you lead them to Christ? How can you help them draw upon the power of God?